And that's the meaning of life.
Oh.
But I started out on a real bang. My name's Jerry Cartwright, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm really glad to be here. So far, I've had a real bang-up time. A car accident on the corner. It's all right. I only killed two people, and they were old. So it's not really all that bad. And they weren't going to the meeting anyway, so to hell with them. I guess where the Al-Anons went, you know. No, that's terrible. Nobody was hurt. That's a good thing. I went to thank James for asking me, at least sending me the email. And there was a lady that called me first, and I can't think of her name, but you can always kind of tell. At least I've got this impression that you can tell what type of a meeting it's going to be by the people that contact you from the meeting, the trusted servants. You know, some of them call you up and they go, "Hey, can you come down here?" "Yeah, okay, thank you." Bang. You know, well, all right. And then there's people that have some kind of happiness, and you know, they wear AA real well, and they're pretty joyous, and they're pretty, you know, pretty nice. And that's what I got out of this meeting. So I was looking forward to it. Once I pulled up in front, I remembered I talked here 15 years ago. Didn't leave a very good impression, obviously. So I'll see you in 2024. Whether we need it or not. I want to welcome all the new people. We're glad you're here. Of course, we're pretty sure that you're not too damn glad you're here. But we're glad you're here. A friend of mine, Vince, used to say that we know you've made some very bad decisions in the last few months. Not because we're smart or anything, because we did. We know. And at this point, I'd cut all the comedy and tell you in all sincerity that before you leave here tonight, I would grab one of those people that had their hands up. You know, you got a couple of gentlemen, well, three gentlemen, actually, that took cakes for over 10 years. A couple of, I'm class of 81, too. All right? Class of 81. If you're really sincere about doing this, you know, you don't have to do it alone. You got to do it. You got to do it, but you don't have to do it alone. And that was always a great deal. The two things I hated about being out there at the end anyway was loneliness and guilt. God, I was guilty if you farted in public, you know. I mean, it was bad. I just was born guilty and never got over it. You know what I mean, right? Somebody, you go, "Oh, no, it's not me. What are you guilty for?" "I don't know. I just, is it Monday?" Just guilty. Hate guilt. Guilt. It's an amazing thing when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and I asked my sponsor how not to be guilty. "I don't know why. I hate guilty. I don't want to be guilty." And he said, "Well, just don't do things to be guilty for." It can't be that simple, can it? Can it be that simple? Like pay your bills and, you know, don't lie to somebody and do what you say you're going to do whenever you say you're going to do it and stuff like that? He said, "Yeah." I hate those old timers. They just give them one. "Yeah." "Oh, well, okay. Okay." So now that I've brought that up, if you don't get a sponsor before you leave here tonight, you'll go home guilty. Yep. I said I was alcoholic. And honest to God, that's the most important thing I know. I can forget to take out the trash and I'll just have a smelly kitchen. But if I forget I'm alcoholic, I'm subject to go back and live in that wonderful hell that I created for myself again. And thanks to the direction that I've been given here, I know that I don't have to do that anymore unless I choose to. And I choose not to, because life's pretty good today. In fact, I need AA more today than I did when I walked in here. I got a hell of a lot more to lose, actually. But I didn't know I was alcoholic. I knew there was something wrong with me long before I ever got to AA. It wasn't like a newsflash that there's something wrong. I knew there was something wrong. You know, I never knew what. When I was really newly sober, I heard a lady share, and she said it was like the whole world got mailed a set of rules, and she didn't get hers. And I thought, no kidding. Really? Because they knew what to do in school. They knew how to act in school. They knew how to act in a restaurant. They knew what to do on a date. They just knew, right? I didn't know. I had no idea how to do any of that stuff. Nothing, you know? And I did, always compared my insides to their outsides, and everybody looked pretty calm and quiet and cool, collected, and, you know, pretty self-assured and confident and stuff. And inside, I'm a massive turmoil. You know, another thing that used to bother me when I got sober is everybody talked about they had a hole in their gut. There was a hole in there, right? And I never related to a hole. And I don't know if anybody in here doesn't relate to having a hole in their gut. But I had a knot in mine. I had a knot in there that felt like overheated barbed wire. It was just in there always. I was tense. And it says it in our book pretty clearly. I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. Just tight. Just got some torque going on inside the old gut in there. You know? Somebody says good morning, you know, boom! You know? Talk to me like that, you asshole. Boom! You know? Just nuts. And I had the problem. I was that way at 6. Wasn't something that happened after puberty or something, you know. I was like 7, and I come from a big family, and we're all from Ohio, and a little farming community, and lived on a couple hundred acres, and, you know, had a dog and stuff. It wasn't for lack of stuff, you know, a fishing pole and a ball bat and a basketball and guy stuff, you know. Sister had girl stuff, you know. We had stuff. You know, sometimes she took my stuff, bitch. but anyway, if you got any siblings, you know, you think that way about them sometimes. You know, they're just rotten little twit. So it's not from lack of stuff. And it wasn't, it was, I hear these poor stories in AA and I feel really bad for the people. It's, like mom was hitting dad and dad was hitting mom and guns are going off and police are being called and all that. You hear those stories and I really feel bad for them. That's not my story. I come from a pretty good family. Mom loved dad and dad loved mom exclusively to the best of my knowledge. You know, I went in a little hanky-panky going on. I mean, maybe there was, but I don't know. But it seemed pretty nice. And I didn't have any of that bad stuff. And I still had it. None of the rest of my cousins had it. Nobody had that feeling. You know, when I got here, I tried to make it like I was a victim of my environment. Everybody else turned out pretty good. You know, wasn't that. It wasn't that at all. But I was looking for something to change it. From my earliest memories, thank God for inventories. If you're in that little part of the program where you got to take an inventory, God, don't put it off. Just go do it. You'll find out so much stuff about yourself, and it'll just open up your eyes And you'll feel like you're really not taking somebody else's seat. You know, you're taking your own seat here in AA, you know. You're finally worthy of parking your butt in a meeting. It's a good thing to do. Anyway, I felt like I needed something. And I was watching. I don't know if there's any farm people here or not. Probably everybody's a, you know, city folk. What they used to do is they'd invite the other people from the little farming places around, and they'd come in and they'd sit in our kitchen and they'd play penny ante poker or a game they have back there called euchre, and they'd eat barbecue sandwich. Are you a euchre player? I see her going, She just got her head going like this. You have a lot of them Dodger dolls on your head. I'm just in one of those moods. Just relax. I don't know what happened. I'm glad I didn't get killed on the corner, I think. But they would come in. They would come in and sit down and play those games, and they'd have a drink. I mean, a drink. Sickening the way they drank, as I see it now. It was weird. They'd have 1.5. I know, because I used to help Mom clean up the next morning. You know, everybody gets shooed out about 2 o'clock in the morning. You just kind of put things aside and you clean up the next morning, right? And I'd help Mom, and there'd be half in a highball glass, half of a drink left, you know? And I don't know anything about half a drink left. I don't know about you guys, but, you know, and there'd be stale beer, you know? I know nothing about stale beer. Absolutely nothing. But one night it hit me that the reason they felt so good, or seemingly was so happy, in that little card game they were having, is it had something to do with what they were drinking. So I wiggled myself around and I got out on this back porch and I uncorked what they were drinking, of the beer they were drinking, and it was some stuff called Robin Hood Ale. And I uncorked it and I took it. It was just a 16-ounce bottle of Robin Hood Ale, and I drank it. And I didn't smell it or any of the bouquet of the grape, you know, none of that. Just uncorked it, drank it. Watched the bubbles come up the neck of the bottle. Just glurk, 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 glurk. And it went down in there, and it did something that I chased for years and years and years. It made all that tension, and it just went away. And I had an overwhelming sense of just, whew. Oh. And every time I say that, I get goosebumps over it. It's just calm inside. The heat of the knot went away, and the torque of that big ball of hurt went away, and I felt good at once. And I didn't know for years, but that's one of the primary deals that alcoholics have, until I got into our book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And it says, relief at once. Don't say take a drink on Monday and feel better on Tuesday. It's talking about relief at once. I mean, that's like right now, Jack. And that's what I got immediately from taking that drink, you know. And the only problem was, somehow or other, I knew I was drunk. And I cannot put together how I knew I was drunk, because there's no drunkenness in my house. Nobody's fallen down and staggering or any of that stuff. I guess maybe it was TV or something, you know. But I knew I was drunk. So I did what I did for a long time before I got to, well, actually for years after I got here, too. I asked my brain for an answer. I'm standing on the back porch. I'm probably 7, maybe 8 or 9. I don't really know. And I said, you're drunk. What are we going to do? And my brain came up with an answer. Did you ever notice that? If you ask your brain for an answer, it'll pop right up with one. Right? You know, like, hit him. Go ahead. Steal that car. They don't use it anyway. You know? No, she doesn't deserve you. Get a divorce. You know, things like that. You know, just, right? Just ask them. Head will come up with it. You know. Maybe it'll ask you a question. I don't know what he meant by that. What do you think they meant by that? I don't know. But anyway, my brain said, no problem, Jerry. Just be cool. Just be cool. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen a 7-year-old cool drunk or not. But I put it all together as best I could. Decided I was just going to walk right out of that back porch and go through the kitchen and go into the front room where all the other kids are playing, and nobody'd ever know. I'm going to pull off my first sneaky poo, right? Yes, I am. I'm going to just slide right through there, and they'll never know. Now, what happened was a little bit different, because what I did was I bounced off of both door jams and fell flat on my face in the middle of that kitchen. And this big, busty German dairy lady, they had a dairy next to us, and she, busty dairy, I just got that. Anyway, I'm sorry. It's a long drive down here. This lady picked me up. I've never picked that up before. This is the first night. She picked me up and she set me on her lap and she held my head to her chest and she tweaked my cheek. You know, she said, oh, isn't that cute? He's had a drink. Isn't that wonderful? I used to hate cheek tweakers. Does anybody hate cheek tweakers? Isn't he cute? Right? Isn't he cute and potential? Right? You ever have potential? Yeah, a lot of potential. And isn't he cute? Makes you want to puke on him or something. Anyway, I'm laying there with my head all propped up thinking, this is good shit. You know? And I don't know if the attention or anything, I don't think that had anything to do with it. What I believe it was is that I had that overwhelming sense of peace and calm come over me. And I drank whenever I could after that. I mean, it's not like I took one drink and went directly to the connections house. You know, I wasn't on Skid Row the next morning or any of that. You know, I hear goofier stuff than that in AA. I really do. You know, one drink and the next day I was shooting heroin in Guadalajara. You know, yeah. I mean, hang around. If you're new, you'll hear some crap like that. You really will. You know, whoa. Now, I also don't understand those people that never had a good time. Right? It was all drudgery. It was dreary and ugly and awful and bad. You know, my generation, that's what they used to say about sex. It's awful, bad, ugly, and save it for the one you love. You know? Yeah. Kind of like if you're coming up in the 50s. If you remember that, all that stuff. She's 60, I'm 60. We know about that. Yeah, don't do it. It's bad and awful and sinful and ugly. And save it until you get married. Sure, Mom. But I had a good time drinking. It was enjoyable to me. I don't know about you, but it worked for me for a long time. It was my best buddy. It did everything I wanted it to do. It allowed me to feel everything I needed to feel and allowed me to put aside other things I didn't need to feel. I could just walk through life with my head up and enjoy the heck out of myself. And I don't know what you do with things like that, but I embrace them. I take a little bit, stash it in my pocket, you know. I ain't going to let it go. And I didn't for a long, long time. It works. Oh, I remember high school, back when I was going to high school, whenever I went, it wasn't all the time, they'd have a dance and you go into the gym and all the girls would be on one side and all the guys would be on the other side. You're remembering this, aren't you? And all the guys would be over here and the girls would be over there, and you can't walk across this, like, it's like a no man's land in the middle of that gymnasium. Right? You can't walk over there because somebody might say no to you, and then you got to turn around and walk back. And everybody's going to know you're a loser, you know, that you're just, you know, whale scum, and no one's going to want to talk to you or anything because you're just a loser. Right? And I remember standing in one of those dances, and my buddy elbowed me and he said, "Hey, Jerry," he says, "I got a bottle out in the bushes." And I went, "Oh, okay, good, good." So we go out in the bushes, and he had a pint bottle of slow gin. I hear there's some slow gin drinkers in here. Yes. Just hang around for a while, see how you feel. So we went out there, and we knocked out that pint bottle of slow gin and stood around and talked for a little while. I remember walking back into that gymnasium differently. I went out there, "Oh, my God, where is anybody going to see us? Oh, hopefully they don't see us in the bushes. I'm big, we're in big trouble." Oh, my God. Right? I came back in going, "Hey." I didn't walk over to the side where the guys are. I walked straight over to the side where the girls are. You know? Because this one girl over there, Donna, she looked kind of good. You know, and I've been wanting to dance with her forever. Or something, forever. You know? "Hey, Donna." And I went right over there to Donna and I said, "Hey, Donna, I'm not worried anymore. The worry's gone. The tension's gone. Everything's gone. I'm just going to go dance with Donna." All right? I walked over there. "You're not worried. I mean, so what if she says no?" You go, "Okay, bitch." You know? I mean, really, that's what you think, right? I mean, that's what goes on in your head. So, just get drunk and it kind of takes the filter between your head and your mouth out. You know, you can't... A lot of folks go to jail with no filter. I did. Because I'm fixing to tell them. But you finally find somebody to dance, and you go out there and get it started. And once it's started, then everybody else will walk across and get somebody to dance, and they'll all dance and everything. But kind of get that one person in, you know. That was... it did that for me. I learned to drive stealing cars. At the end of my drinking, my favorite thing was Wild Turkey and Tylenol. Oh, yeah. If you can get out of your chair, it says things. You get messages. I don't know if you guys ever drank and got messages or not. Tylenol, Secanol, Nebutol, name it all. We took it all, right? Just... Girls over there, you can always tell. What was that? I don't know what that was. Somebody tell me what that was. It's just a downer. And sometimes referred to as stumblers. But, yeah, if you can get out of your chair, you get messages. I got messages. Those things used to say things to me like, "Jerry, drive that car." "That car right there, Jerry." Right? Now, I know today, I believe wholeheartedly, without any doubt at all, that there's that little good side, that little piece of God that we all have. Some of us call it a conscience. Is it something I said, honey? It's sitting over there on my other shoulder saying, Jerry, don't do that. It's not your car. But I listened to the one that said, Jerry, drive that car. Right? And I never thought of it as stealing. I had a justifying mind. I'll just justify it to myself. You know, I got sober and they're talking about rigorous honesty. Took me. I got to the point where I wouldn't lie to you very much and hardly stole anything. I mean, that was good for me. Right? But the one that I lied to all the time was me. You know, I did. Lied to me a lot. It was terrible. Another good reason to have a sponsor if you're new. You know, because of all the people in the world that you're lying to and you're trying to get to buy your bull crap, you're the biggest one. You know, so just run all your great thinking by the sponsor. And they'll go, oh, no. But anyway, I never thought of it as stealing. I thought of it as borrowing, and I'll bring it back. You know, the only problem is I might borrow it in Wilmington, and I'll consider bringing it back someplace when I'm in Phoenix. Now, there's this line in between those two places. It's called a state line. And when you've stolen something from one state and you take it to another state, it becomes a felony. They don't like that. They frown on that stuff. So you can't go back and say, here's your car back, because you've just admitted taking, you know. So it's not a good thing. But consequently, they start locking you up. And I started getting locked up. You can't have an attitude like I had with... and not get locked up. It's just difficult to not get locked up. Even as a teenager, I didn't tell you, but when I was about 13, my family moved from that little farming community, they moved to San Pedro. And I started running the streets. I got my first major resentment because my parents... This is still funny to me. I used to say when I shared that my parents moved me. They moved me. And I was talking someplace, I don't know, wherever, my sponsor happened to be sitting in the audience. And after the talk, he came up and he said, Jerry, did it ever dawn on you that the whole family moved? And I said, no, actually it never did. He said, oh, didn't your mom and dad and sister come along? And I said, yeah. He said, well, you weren't the only one that came then, did you? And I, see, I'd never, honestly, and that opened a huge door for me to see about how selfish and self-centered, self-serving I am. I never thought of them at all. Never. They moved me. I left all my friends and my baseball team and da 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 da. I never once thought that my mother and father, who had both been raised in that area, left all their friends, all of their brothers and sisters, everybody. My sister left all her friends. I never thought of it. Not one time did anybody else's well-being or anything ever come to my mind. Not once. And I went, whoa. Now I think I understand. It was all about me. They moved me. And I got resentful and took to the streets. And it was the 60s. And I met an old hippie. There's another old hippie in here someplace, wherever we went to. Surfboard shirt, long hair. We were talking about old hippies. And things were... nothing changed. It had been going on for years. It's just that we became out front with it and obvious about it and doing all the things that we were doing. You know, we used to like, you could go down to the pharmacy and get empty capsule things. You could get whole big jars of them and put your own stuff in there, right? Yeah, I can't do that anymore, but it was cool when you could do it. You know, and people put stuff in there and then they'd go sell them. It's a little entrepreneurial ship, you know, they got going on. And things would be going on. But the people that I hung around with, they'd get confused because they'd want to sample their own stuff, see? So they'd forget what's in the red ones this week wasn't in the red ones last week, you know. So they would forget what it was, and they'd find somebody hanging around the park like me. And they'd say, here, Jerry, take some of these. And I'd go, okay. And we'd chase it with whatever was, you know, if somebody stole Courvoisier from their dad, we'd drink that. Usually it was Red Mountain wine. Yeah, a couple of wine connoisseurs in here. Yeah, Red Mountain wine. When I was drinking it, it was 98 cents a gallon. And I'm relatively sure that it never saw a grape. Never saw a grape. It was a lot like colored formaldehyde, actually. Yeah, in fact, one guy died in the park after drinking a couple gallons of that, and he was there for about a week and didn't rot. It was good. Not like embalming goodies, I guess. But if you do that, in my mind, I've always been a curious type, and about 20 minutes later, you think, wait a minute, what was that? What did I just... You've done that too, huh? Yeah. I love it when they relate. Gotcha. You're drinking, we'll be screwed now, little girl. And so you'd find the person that gave it to you. And you'd run around the park until you found them and say, hey, what was that? And they'd always say something spiritually enlightening. Like, hell, I don't know. Let's hang around 10 minutes and see how you act. Whoa. Because you know you're going to do one of two things, right? You're either going to sit there on that bench and rub your nose and say things like, wow. Just, wow. If you're new here in AA, let me tell you that we understand wow is to be a complete sentence, okay? So don't worry about it. If you say things like, wow, man, we think you're a linguist. So don't run off. Or else you might get very busy. You could get very busy and just, you know, put all the bottles in a row and get all the leaves raked up and get everything, you know, take all the wrinkles out of the trash can liners and just everything gets really nice. Put it all, you know, just sit there and do everything. Just run around, say hi to everybody, talk to everyone else. Wow. You know. Half a block away, you see a dime on the ground, you know, it's 1942D. Somewhere in the mid-70s, I should have wrote that date down because I went and saw the record. I was standing in front of a judge. It's not the first time or, you know, wasn't the last time actually either. But I was standing in front of a judge and he's going through my record. And some people have a record, a file. Mine looks a lot like a Webster's Unabridged College Dictionary. And I'm not proud of that. I'm not saying that to, you know, aren't I, you know, I don't mean that at all. Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. That's just what the darn thing looks like. Okay? It's just, they've got me a few times. I'm not good at evading capture. I get a few of them, you know, 2 1/2s and a half of a fifth of wild turkey in me. You can just come down and get me with a butterfly net, you know. There he is. Seen Jerry? No, just go to the corner. He'll be hanging onto the tree, you know. But anyway, the judge is reading this thing, and every once in a while he just cracks up. He just busted up, and he calls the bailiff over. They go, come here and read this, and they read that, and they go, just busting up, right? And he. Tears and stuff. He gets his hanky out and the bailiff goes back over and he'll read a few more pages and he'll do it again. And he calls them in, they read it, they're just going crazy. They're having a fun time. And that bothered me when I got here for a long time. I did. I just said, what the hell were they laughing at? What is so funny? I mean, I'm wearing the bracelets. It's not very darn funny to me. You know, what are they laughing at? And I ask everybody, one of those old goats, I think it was Bob Lemke, said, Jerry, if you want to know that bad, go down and look. It's an open record. It's your record. You can pay for the thing, and they'll pull it, and you can read your record. Now, I don't know what it was exactly, excuse me, that they read. But there's a couple of things in there that got my attention, right? A couple of things in there that... One of them says had to discontinue field sobriety test for fear that subject would injure himself. It's where you go to touch your nose and embed your finger in your eye. God. And if you get pulled over, if anybody's deciding to go back out and do a little, you know, a little research or something, be careful what you say to them because they write this stuff down. Now they got cameras. They got cameras now. They'll see you. You know, And it's terrible. You can't even pee on the side of the road anymore. You know, bad. But, because apparently they pulled me over and they asked me if I'd had anything to drink. And I said, yes. And he said, how much have I had to drink? And I gave him the perfect alcoholic answer. It's perfect. And I've been doing research of this in meetings now for a number of years. And everybody agrees with me. He said, how much have you had to drink? And I said, all of it. Huh? Think about it. If there was any more there, I wouldn't be here. I must have drank all of it, right? Huh? Perfect? Makes sense to me. Perfect sense to me. Oh. But this time it was a little bit different. He said, Mr. Cartwright, I see that we've never given you any opportunity to do anything about your drinking. And I like to hear that because I have one of those minds. He said, we've never given you the opportunity. See, that's not my fault. That's their fault. You see? Right? I like those little holes you can get your ego and your pride through. You know what I mean? Just kind of wiggle around it, you know? Okay? Kind of like when them salmon where there's not a lot of water, you know, you just kind of... Just get up there any way you can. And he said, we've never given you. And I went, you know, you get on your best humble look. You look at the top of your shoes and you say things like, yes, I know, Your Honor, I'd really like to change my life. But, you know, I just haven't been an underprivileged child and I just never got the opportunity. And you go on with all that drivel and garbage. And he said, well, I'm going to give you an opportunity. And I perked right up. And he said, I'm going to sentence you to 2 years in the state penitentiary. Or you can go down and enroll in what California has called SB 38. And that'll let you go and do something and see what, you know, maybe there's some type of help for you with your drinking. Because it looks like every time you've been arrested, you've been drunk. And that's true. Every time I was arrested, I was drinking. I didn't get arrested every time I was drinking, but every time I did get arrested, I was drinking. So, I put two and two together. Let's see. 2 years in state penitentiary, AA. 2 years in state penitentiary, AA. I put two and two together and I divided by holy shit. And I came out. I came out with go to AA. So I went down there and I did all they're supposed to do and, you know, watched Father Martin's Chalk Talk and all that stuff and saw the alcoholic brain and the normal brain and all that stuff, you know. They had the alcoholic brain and formaldehyde. You could almost hear it go, but, and I went to some meetings. I was sitting in a place where I used to work, and I was there with a guy who I used to drink with. And he had recently got out of Patton State Mental Hospital. Those are the folks I drink with, you know, the real brain surgeons of life, you know. And I was sitting in there complaining because it was my day to go to A&A. And I'm in there just complaining and sniveling like the little wimp that I was, and sometimes still am. And I'm just complaining, and he walked through and he said, Jerry, what's the matter? And I said, well, I asked our grandmother, I said, we've got to go to A&A. I should be grateful I'm not doing time in the penitentiary, but not me, boy. I'm going to snivel, you know? Crap. He said, well, listen, if you got to go to those meetings anyway, why don't you come with me? He said, I've been going. I knew immediately what was wrong with him. He'd been happy and stuff lately. I thought, well, that's weird. You know, I've been mad at the UPS driver. I wanted to shoot him. And he'd say, yeah, easy does it. Take care. You know, it'll be all right. Yeah. Maybe he'll be on time tomorrow. Just, you know, this too shall pass. And I'm thinking, whoa, wow, where'd this come from? You know, usually he was loading the gun, you know. So I said, okay, it made sense to me. He said, if you got to go anyway, I'll go with you. Then you'll know somebody and you won't feel quite so, you know, uptight. And I'll introduce you to some people. And what the heck? You got to go. And I went, yeah, okay, that's a good idea. So I went and he took me to this Gestapo group over in Bellflower, you know, where you walk up and there's 87 people you got to shake hands with. Good evening, good evening, good evening, good evening. You know, and they're all there. And, you know, hi, welcome, have a jelly donut and your life will change, you know. Looks like a young Republican Amway convention or something, you know. Just teeth everywhere. They're all happy. Just happy. You know, I knew they were blowing weed at the break or something. I knew they were. We're new. We got this intelligence. We know something's happening. You know, and I stood in the back of the room and I waited because I knew sooner or later, I'm slick. I'm smart. I know all the answers. I got everything going on. I am cool. I'm living in my car, but by God, I know, you know, what's happening. And I stood in the back of the room and I waited. And they had this guy come over from Texas. And I don't know if you've ever heard anybody share that come from Texas or not, but they introduced themselves a little differently. What I heard him say, now that's important that you grasp that, what I heard him say, it's not necessarily what he said, because I suffer from twisted perception, okay? I don't necessarily hear what you say. Well, I mean, what comes out of your mouth is not necessarily... You can tell me you love me, and I've heard you want to borrow $50. Okay? All right, so that's just kind of the way that ran, all right? What I believe I heard him say was, "Hi, my name's Billy Bob Smith, and thanks to God and Alcoholics Anonymous, it hasn't been necessary for me to take a drink in 5,321 years, one day at a time, praise the Lord," or something like that. You know? And I didn't hear... hasn't been necessary. Because I don't know how you guys got here, but by the time I got here, it was necessary. If I don't have fresh alcohol in my system every, you know, 3 or 4 hours, I got the whippies, you know. You know, have a cup of coffee! Oh, sorry! You know, just... You know, lemonade! Oh. So, it was, you know, it was necessary. And he said, thanks. Now, that's a big deal, thanks. Thanks to. We miss thanks. If you're new, think about that for just a half a second. I'm the only one in the room will tell you to think, okay? Think about that for half a second. Think. He said, thanks. That means that he's happy. Now, drinking and not drinking is one thing. You know, if you're locked up or whatever, right, you've got house arrest and the probation officer or your parole officer is coming by to see, and you can't be ripped, so you got to be, you know, you got to. That's one thing, but to be happy about it, that's a completely separate boogie, right? Happy about not drinking? No, 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 no. Sorry, Charlie, not this tuna, right? No, 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 no. He's happy and he's grateful, and I missed all that. All I heard him say was God, and I went, oh. No. I knew it was too good to be true. I knew it. Just knew it. Had to have something to do with God. Now, you can't do what I've done and hope for any kind of good result out of a prayer. You can't do the things I've done. You can't carry guns and hurt people and steal and do, and I mean, it's there. If it's a commandment, I've busted it. Okay? And you can't hope for any of that. And I thought, well, I'm in deep pucky. If that's what it's got to do with. And I told that guy that was nice to me to take that big book and just shove it in a place it wouldn't fit. I don't think it fit. I don't know. And I went back out to the same corner with the same guys. Now, that's the best definition of insanity that I know. It's mine. It works for me. Going back to the same place, doing the same thing with the same people, knowing this time it's going to be different. If you do the same thing, you will always get the same result. It's like walking out in the rain knowing you won't get wet this time. Well, that's an oversimplification, but it's the truth. If you can walk out in the rain and not get wet, call me. Okay? I will give you my number. I want to know about that. Right? Every time you walk out in the rain, you're going to get wet. Every time you go back to the same corner with the same guys doing the same stuff, drinking the same, you're going to get, if you're alcoholic, it's going to turn out to be the same. So, but that's not what my head said. Right? One of the great reasons that I understood the second half of the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous, that my life had become unmanageable, is through that particular thing that happened that day. I walked back to the same place with the same people doing the same thing, knowing this time it was going to be different. It's going to be different. The second half of that step says, came to believe that our life had become unmanageable. Unmanageability. That our lives had become unmanageable. Wow. Now that's just about unmanageability to the nth degree. You're going to go back out and enter back into that hell that you are hoping to get away from. All right? It's the only answer my brain got. The biggest pill I've ever had to swallow in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's a lot of things about myself that I've not wanted to look at and not wanted to see. But the biggest one was that when I got here on May the 14th of 1981, right, in the condition that I was in, and I'll describe it in just a couple seconds here, I was at the top of my game. I was at the top of my game. That's the best plan I could put together. Very top of my game. It didn't have anything to do with the cops were bad, or the coach was rotten, or the science teacher was an idiot, or mom was a goof, or dad didn't have any. Eh? Nobody ever held a gun to my head and said, go out and screw up your life. Nobody. Nobody ever said, you know, here, I'm going to hit you with this ball bat so you'll be goofier and crap, and you'll go out there and just mess up. Nobody ever did that to me. Those are all my decisions for me. I did those things for me. Right? I did it. What booze did was it allowed me to stay sane enough to find you guys. It worked for a long time. That was the hardest pill I ever had to swallow. You know? Crazy. Ugh. 2 years later, well, the guy that came and got me, this guy named Gil, he says it's three, so I'm going to go with his time. I was a little out of it. So I'm going to take his calendar. 3 years later, on May the 13th of 1981, I got in a gang fight and forgot my gang. I do shit like that. Yes, sirree. I told six guys I was going to kick their butt, and the first two guys came, and I was standing, and they weren't, but the other four just beat the snot out of me. Oh, God, I look like warmed over death. My eyebrow was hanging down here. My nose was over here. My front teeth had been kicked out. My ribs were broken. Four ribs were broken, and my left knee was as big as a basketball. And the front of my shirt was nothing but a mass of blood. And I did what every slick, cool, dynamite, got it all together, knows all the answers, does when that happens to them. There's people in here nodding their head. What'd I do? I said, I went to mom's house. That's exactly what you do when you're that slick. When you are that slick, you go to mom's house. Right? Now, I don't know why, but somehow or other, I think that you're supposed to knock on mom's door. She's supposed to answer the door, and she's supposed to say something like, hi, honey, how are you? God, it's good to see you. How's wife and kids? You know, losing a little weight? How's that new car running? Right? I said, you know, something. Right? Maybe it's too many Ozzie and Harriet or Donna Reed things or something. I don't know. But, God, whenever I say that, everybody in here goes, huh? Yeah. Ozzie and Harriet? I have to find a new one. Anyway, what happened that morning is she opened the door and she looked at me and she said, oh my God. And I knew for just a little nanosecond that what I'd done is I'd reached in there and pulled out a piece of her heart. I knew that. And I don't know why it was that second. I got no idea what that moment. I saw it in this drunken stupor. It penetrated what's left of my alleged mind. It got in there and I kept it. And other times I had not. But they took me to the hospital. I came back from the hospital. That night, I drank everything that was in their house. They said it was like eight beers and a half a fifth of Passport Scotch. And I passed out. And the next morning, I woke up and I'm sitting in her kitchen. And my brain is doing what alcoholics' brains do. It's going, where are we going to go? What are we going to do? What are you going to do now? We can't go over there. Can't do this. They won't like you over there. You can't work. Right? And right in the middle of this whole thing, it went, scared the snot out of me. Because I hadn't had a quiet mind in a long time. It just stopped. And I remembered a phone number for this guy used to work, because we used to work together. Now that in itself is an amazing phenomenon. I couldn't tell you who was president, what month it was, what day it was. What city I was in. I was at mom's house, and I'll give you all the money in the world if you just tell me what city you're in. I couldn't tell you. I was just fried, and I remembered that phone number. And I asked her if will you make a phone call for me, and she said yes. And so she dialed the telephone, and she handed it to me, And he answered, and all I said was one word. I said, Gil. Now, I haven't talked to him in 3 years. I just said, Gil. And he said, yeah, Jerry, how are you? And I told that man the most important thing I've ever said in my life. And it's the reason why I'm standing here tonight. It is, because I made him a promise not quite 28 years ago. When he said, how are you? I said, Gil, I give up. You can take me anywhere you want to take me, and I'll do anything you want me to do. I just can't live like this anymore. And then he told me something that no one had ever told me. Good people in my life. I got no right to complain about the good people who are in my life. They're good, decent, God-fearing, go to work, pay their taxes folks. They're right. They're good people. And they had all tried to help me. But none of them ever told me what this other alcoholic told me. I got the first little sample of what takes place in this thing called AA, where one alcoholic talks to another alcoholic. And I knew how bad he was. Him and I have leaned over the trunk of that car and puked together. I know how bad he was. I knew he just got out of Patton State Hospital a year or two before. I knew it. And when I told him I can't live this way anymore, he said to me, and I want you to know if you're new in here or used or having trouble, what he said to me was, Jerry, you don't ever have to live that way again if you don't want to. And no one had ever told me that. I'd never heard that before. And he's been right. Because today it's not that way. It's not. He picked me up that day and took me in, set me in front of the meeting with another girl. She was going south on the northbound side of a freeway. And the highway patrolman stopped her, and she got out and sprayed mace in the highway patrolman's face. So they slapped the boogie juice out of her, too. Yeah, they did. They set her right down next to me, and she's all, right, and I'm all, right. And they paraded the newcomers past and said, see, if you go back out, you'll look like that. A couple of them screamed, ah, no! But I just started going, and somebody tonight that took a cake, I think, I don't know which one of the gentlemen it was, said, I just asked him, what do I do? That's what I did. What do I do? What do I do now? My best thinking put me here. Not your best thinking, or my mother's best thinking, or my coach's best thinking, or my boss's best thinking, or anybody. My best thinking put me here. So I had to have someone else be the manager. What do I do? And I started doing what they told me to do. And weird stuff. I went from totally surrendered to... I'm going to tell you this one little story, and then I'm going to shut up. I went to totally surrendered. Okay. And about 60 days later, I was wonderful. I became wonderful. And nobody in here has ever become wonderful. I know that, but I just became wonderful. And I'm sitting in meetings, and if you go to a lot of meetings, and that's what they told me, meetings, 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 meetings. And I said, I got to go to meetings? They said, yes, you got to go to meetings until you want to go to meetings. And then once you want to go to meetings, you don't have to go to meetings. I went, really? I've got that together now after these years that there's only two times you have to go to meetings, when you don't want to and when you do want to. But I went to a lot of meetings, and I'm sitting in there, and you'll hear things in meetings like that, you know, one drink and right to the connections house, all that garbage, you know, psychobabble, horse pucky. And it is, man. If it ain't in the book, it's bull pucky. I'm sitting in there, and I hear people say things like, today I became president of Bank of America. And my life is so good, I just can't stand it. And I've just become, you know, up the ladder, and today I'm, you know, president of Bank of America. Right? And I'm sitting down there in that meeting, and I don't have two nickels to rub together. I couldn't pay attention, okay? And he's talking about being president of Bank of America. But if you've been around a little while, you know what to do. So you go up after the meeting, you shake his hand. Good for you. God bless you. I'll keep coming back one day at a time. Everything's wonderful. And you go home and you call your sponsor. Well, that's Bank of America, and I'm broke, and it's son of a bitch. I want mine. Where's mine? He's got his. I want mine. Give me mine. I want mine right now. Give me mine, and I want it now. And he said something. Are you sober? And I went, yeah. He said, then shut up, read a book, and call me tomorrow. Bam. Whoa. So you go to a meeting the next night. And you go to the, and you hear some guy standing at the podium, and he says, you know, Last night, my wife let me back in the bedroom. We now share a love that's deeper than farther and better than we've ever known. We're just walking hand in hand through this glorious thing called life, my wife and I. And it just took one night back in the bedroom. It was just wonderful, right? So you know what to do. You ask the meeting, you go, hey, God bless you, easy does it, one day at a time, thank you very much. You go out and get in your car, it's being held together with baling wire, and you... and you're going home, and you're thinking, I'm sleeping on the couch, I ain't getting none, what is this guy, crazy? So you go home and you call your sponsor, and you say, hey, what's that? He's in for a bing-a-bing, I ain't getting nothing. Where's the rooker, sir? Where's mine? I want mine. Give me mine. And he says, are you sober? And I go, yeah. He said, then shut up, read a book, and call me tomorrow. Bam. Now, I would like to sit here and report to you that your speaker this evening did that for a couple weeks. And he saw the light, got to have his fingers upon the change that was taking place. Actually, I did that for 4 years. I did. And one night, I walked in the house, and a daughter of mine, who hadn't spoke to me in 4 years, because I almost ran over her and her girlfriend, drunk at a party, and she had to leave her school. We had to put her in another school, because it was... I used to say, Denise, get in the car, I'll take you to school. And it was raining outside, rain, bad, coming down in sheets. And she had made that transition from, you know, tom girl to little, you know, where they discover boys. You know, remember that thing, you girls, when they got, oh, you got to look beautiful. Everything's got to be wonderful, right? She would rather go to school looking like a drowned rat than get in the car with me. Just hated me, right? And I walked in the house that night, because that's what the sponsor said to do. Go from work, go home. Don't go anyplace else. Go straight home. Opposite of what I used to do. Walk in the house. I walked in the house, and I walked to the kitchen, and I gave my wife my paycheck, and I bowed twice. Usually Al-Anon's like that part of the story. But this night she threw me a curve. She said, Denise wants to talk to you. And I went, oop. Not back in the gut. Oh no, not that. No time to call a sponsor. I'm here to report that the farthest I've ever walked in my life was those 9 feet from that kitchen across that hallway into the living room. And I walked in there and I said, Denise, your mom says you want to talk to me. And she said, yeah. And she got up off the couch and she walked over and she put her arms around me and she laid her head right there on my chest. And she said, will you take me to a daddy-daughter dance? And she cried. And I cried. And her mother and sister cried. I found out later the neighbor's dog cried, for Christ's sake. That was heavy. Because I hadn't done it. I just did what you said. I go to meetings. And I get to early and set up, and I stay late and help them clean it up, and I sweep the floor. It's back when we had ashtrays. I was a big ashtray cleaner rubber dude. And I cleaned up the ashtrays and washed the mugs. We had them big porcelain, thick gold muggles, and we washed them, and I did whatever you asked me to do. Right? I was the birthday guy and the GSR, and I picked people up and took them. I just doing what you tell me to do. Right? The stuff in that book and what my sponsor told me. Nothing else. It's like AA 101. There's a line in our book, new one, and should mean a lot to you. It should mean a lot to you, right? It means a tremendous amount of me, to me. And it says it every time we have a meeting, it says it. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. What that means is that you don't need to get out the machete and go out there and cut a new way through the bushes. Not necessary. There is a way to stay sober, already paved. There's a line in the middle. People going both ways. Damn it. But there's a way to go. There is another way to live. You don't have to think it. Don't need to make it any better. It works just fine as it is. It's written in that book that he talked about earlier. It's not psychobabble. This is not psychotherapy. It's not group therapy. What we have here is a spiritual malady. That's what that book says we have. And this is all about cleaning up the inside of your house and finding a power greater than you that you can walk through life and keeping your eyes open and look at other people to live comfortably and peacefully. And thanks to you guys, not to anything else, thanks to you and what's written in that book. That's the life I have today. My grandson yesterday was running around the house. He's one, and he does what one-year-olds do. He tears up the house. Just keys, you know, hand lotion, everything. Just everywhere. And he ran around for about 2 hours, and then he ran over to my chair, and he looked up at me, and he went like this. And I picked him up, and I set him on my lap, and he grabbed a hold of my mustache. And then the little bastard fell asleep. And he sat there and just fell asleep in my arms. Now, I know as good as I know anything that if I'm drunk, that don't happen. There's no way to get from there in front of that judge to here in front of you. There's no buses that run that way. It doesn't happen except here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.